Tonight, we want to continue our study of the Maharal. As I said at the outset, my experiment is to try every Tuesday night to come up with another theme in the Maharal and to try to find what I call the antecedents. You know, where is the Maharal coming from? You know, what came before the Maharal? And what came after the Maharal? How did they build and move on based on the insights of the Maharal? So tonight, because it's the last meeting of Tavshin Ayin Vav, I thought we would talk a little bit about Rosh Hashanah. And of course, Rosh Hashanah is a gigantic topic. And the Maharal has a lot to say about Rosh Hashanah. We're only going to touch on the tip of the iceberg. And hopefully we'll be able to at least chip away at that. If we have more time at the end and you're still awake, I would like to talk about another dimension of Rosh Hashanah in the Maharal. Let's just talk a little bit about a problem that I find with regard to Rosh Hashanah that maybe we could solve possibly tonight. Now, on these pages, for those of you who like a text, I tried an experiment tonight. And what I did was I left spaces for you to fill in, not as a quiz, because you're not my 18-year-old students, but in case you want to answer my questions and fill in something, I left a little space. You'll see it as we go along. So what I'd like to begin with is a comment of the Vilna Gaon. Now, just as a sort of lead-in to the Vilna Gaon, I would like to ask you the following question, and I'm not asking for any scholarship here. I just want a knee-jerk response. You know, we're about to enter a period of time that begins on Rosh Hashanah, culminates on Yom Kippur. These are certainly days of judgment. And here's my question. Just give me a quick knee-jerk response, right? Without thinking, because if you think too much, you'll try to see that I don't want the answer, which I do want. Is crying appropriate for this period of time?
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. That should be your knee-jerk response. Yet, look at the Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says, Ein livkos b'Rosh Hashanah. Crying is inappropriate for Rosh Hashanah. Kimavur bi Ezra, as Ezra points out, al tivku. Now, we're not ready for Ezra yet, but that's going to be on page 2, where Ezra tells the people of Israel, al tivku, don't cry on Rosh Hashanah. That speech that Ezra delivered to the people took place, as the Tanakh tells us, on the day of Rosh Hashanah, and he told them, al tivku. The Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, quotes this pasuk in Sefer Nehemiah, but Sefer Nehemiah is quoting Ezra, to the effect that on Rosh Hashanah we don't allow crying. Yep. However, on the Shulchan Aruch Orach Chaim, there's a super commentary called the Ber Hetev, who quotes a lot of different later poskim. Amongst them, he quotes the Arizal, and he testifies that the Arizal, okay, let's do a little history. Where did the Ari live? In Tzfat. How many years ago did he live? 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago. Okay, he was a contemporary of Maran HaMachaber of Yosef Cairo. He lived in Tzfat 5 centuries ago. And so many of our traditions date back to the Arizal. He had a tremendous impact on the history of religious Jewish life. And that's true for both Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. He's the one unique individual that wore 2 hats, you know. Nag, Harizal Nag, it was the tradition of the Ari, livkos for Rosh Hashanah of Yom Kippur. Now again, if the Arizal was crying on Yom Kippur, I wouldn't make any big deal about it. I could see that Yom Kippur is definitely a day of crying. I remember distinctly I was approximately 22 years old when I spent Yom Kippur in Lakewood Yeshiva.
The Chassidim is the inverse.
Oh, so hold on, Jackie, to the Chassidim. I just wanted to finish a story. You like a good story. This is a true story. It took place about four decades ago. Not centuries, I'm not that old. And in the yeshiva of Lakewood on Yom HaKippurim, I remember they got up to the section called Eila Ezkro, which has to do with the Asar Rugi Malchus, and a Talmud started crying. It was unbelievable. It was like a tornado had hit the yeshiva. The entire yeshiva, one by one, started crying. 500 yeshiva students crying. It was an amazing experience. But here it says that the Arizal would cry even on Rosh Hashanah. That is not what we saw in the Vilna Gaon. Now, I'm not saying that the Vilna Gaon and the Arizal always have to agree, but the Gaon takes such a very strong stand, and he writes, Ein livkos b'Rosh Hashanah, kimavur b'Ezra al tivku. Ezra himself gave us that dictum, no crying on Rosh Hashanah. How could it be that the Arizal was crying on Rosh Hashanah? But that's only half the story. The second half of the story is the Omar, the Arizal is quoted as declaring, Misha eino boche b'yomim elu, he who doesn't cry during these days, ein nishmaso tovo ushlema. That's a very heavy accusation that one's soul is not complete if he doesn't cry on these days, the first of which is Rosh Hashanah. So we have what I call two polar extremes. We got the Vilna Gaon who's saying, don't even dream about crying on Rosh Hashanah. And we got the Arizal who says, don't even dream about not crying on Rosh Hashanah. So therefore, on the next line, again, this is part of my experiment, I write Ha'ora. Ha'ora means, you know, a comment here, Kasha. Kasha means, how do I reconcile these two statements? So now, Jackie, I'm ready. So the Chassidim do cry in Rosh Hashanah or they don't cry in Rosh Hashanah? Which one was it?
They're happy on Yom Kippur. This is the difference. They should be happy on Yom Kippur and unhappy on Rosh Hashanah.
So you're saying that the Chassidim will follow the Arizal on Rosh Hashanah and the Gaon on Yom Kippur. Okay. Interesting compromise. Okay. Now, my friends, we want to study a Gemara in Horios, one of the less commonly learned popular Masechtas in Shas, and specifically the Meiri's comment on that Gemara. Now, the Gemara itself says the following, and if you want to see that, you'll go down towards the middle of the page. You see what says, Maral mi Prag? So the next line under that, the Maral quotes the Gemara in Horios, which the Meiri is going to embellish. The Perek Gimel de Horios on Daf Yud Beis, Omar Abaye, Hashta di Amrit. Now we've come to the conclusion, Simona Milsahi. If you have a highlight, I would highlight those three words or underline it with a pen. Simona Milsahi. This is the final conclusion of the sugya in Horios, which means that when we make simonim, we'll see what that means, milsahi, it has some significance to it. Therefore, he says, yehei ragil, a person should get accustomed, lemechal, to eat, bereish shata, the first day of the year, that's what we call Rosh Hashanah, kara, rubia, crazy, silka, vitamri. So let's go backwards. Tamri is what? Dates. Silka are beets. Selik. Crazy is a little bit more complicated. I think it's called in English leeks.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called in other languages, but in Hebrew it's called crazy.
Karat, it's called in Hebrew and Arabic.
Virubia. Rubia is a kind of a bean. I think in English, it's called a black bean of some sort. And then we have krah. Krah,
it's a type of courgette. It's like between courgette and pumpkin.
Okay. I don't know what a courgette is because that's probably French.
Suzuki?
Okay. Maybe zucchini?
Zucchini.
Okay. Anyway, it has a lot of seeds in it, as we'll soon see. So the Gemara itself records that this is the stuff we should be eating on Rosh Hashanah. And why? Because of this principle called Simona Milsahi.
Does that draw sheep to make the Seder? On Rosh Hashanah?
The Seder of what of Pesach, you mean?
Yes.
No, there the word simanim means something else. Those are memory devices. Well, no, I'm just saying when we use the word simanim for Leil HaSeder, it doesn't mean the same as simanim on Rosh Hashanah. We shouldn't confuse the two. Yes. Simanim on the Seder are memory devices. Like the Gemara very often gives us simanim to help us remember things.
So you don't do it?
No, I'm just saying that we read out the simanim on Leil HaSeder and we sing it even. Kadesh Urchatz. Why? Because we want the people to remember exactly what the order is. Here, we're talking about something totally different.
I have a brother-in-law who is, one of my brother-in-law is Sephardi.
Right.
And they make a complete Seder.
When?
The first and the second night of Rosh Hashanah.
Oh, okay, fine. So let's talk about Simon. That's what we want to talk about. The Meiri says the following. Now, the Meiri lived about 1,000 years ago. And he's a Rishon. We have to take his words with COVID rush with a lot of seriousness, a lot of weight. We're going to take the Meiri and we're going to try to figure out what the Chidush, what the insight of the Meiri is. Now, by way of introduction, I want to ask the following question. When we say that we're going to eat these simanim on Rosh Hashanah, is it A or B? All right, there are two possible approaches, and I want to see if we can figure out which of the two is adopted by the Meiri. One approach is that there's something inherently significant in eating the simanim. The eating of the simanim, we say in Yiddish, tuzayf. Tuzayf means it accomplishes something in the world. So, you know, in the higher worlds. The other approach is to say no. Eating the simanim doesn't have anything inherently significant to it, but it does something for us, and it helps us. It's a means to an end, but not an end unto itself. Let's now carefully read the Meiri and see if we can figure out how he understands the significance of the Siman. Derech Siman, the purpose of a Siman, is la'orer bo levavo. By eating the Simanim, he awakens his heart. Lehanhaga tova, to a proper behavior. You know, there are many things that can bring a person to behave properly, to upgrade and inspire him. One of them, he says, the Meiri, is these simanim. Vehu amro, litein al shulchano b'leil Rosh Hashanah, kara v'rubya v'kresi v'silka v'tamri. How are these things on his table on Rosh Hashanah night going to uplift him and awaken him to, so that he is inspired to anhagat tova? Shehem inyanam mehem, the inyanam meaning the punchline or the message, the theme of these simanim fit into one of two categories. Mehem, amongst them, agdelim maher, are things that grow very quickly, they grow overnight, so to speak. Umehem, amongst them, are things shegdelosam ola harbe, meaning they multiply and there are many of them. Ukidei, maybe if you don't mind, we'll close the door here because I can't concentrate. Sorry. Thank you so much. He says the following. Ukidei shalo likashel bahem lasos derech nachash. Okay, now we have to spend a few minutes understanding the word nachash. Who can tell you what the word nachash is?
Snake.
No, not in this context.
Nachash.
Or to be menachesh.
Guess.
Are signs. You know, signs like horoscopes and different kinds of omens. You know, there are people who read these signs.
Symbols.
And that's something that the Torah is completely opposed to, these signs and these omens. And therefore, you have to be very careful says the Meiri, not to fall into a trap here. There's a very dangerous, you know, you're walking on a tight rope here, you know, on the edge of a high roof, because if you make the wrong step, you might fall into Nachash, thinking that these simonim are omens that foretell the future. You know, these are stargazers and people who tell you what's going to happen in the future. They read your palm. That's an Isur Nachash or Nichush. Is therefore, in order to avoid such a pitfall, Tiknu Lomar, the Takana was not just to eat these simonim, but Lomar Aleim, to make a declaration before you eat these things. And what's the substance and the content of these declarations? Dvarim Hama'orim L'tshuva. He should say and recite declarations that will awaken him to do tshuva, as we said before, La'orbo L'vavo L'anhaga Tova. For Husha Omrim B'kra, this thing called Kra. He says, Yikru Zichuyosenu B'rubya Yirbu Tzidkosenu B'kresi Yichrisu Sonenu. All these are meant to tell him that, listen, buddy, we're not guessing what the future is going to be. This is not a stargazing contest, you know, where we're looking into see the ball, what's that called, the crystal ball of the future. But rather what we're doing is we're hoping that we can awaken ourselves or inspire ourselves to do something with our lives that will increase our virtues or our merits. V'yadua shekol zeh eino ela ha'ara. He says all this is just a way of waking us up. She'ein adav toli ba'amira levad rak b'tshuva uv'maisim tov. So again, I come back to my original question. That's why I asked you to fill in here in the next line. Lefi ha'meiri, what is the nature of these simonim? Are they meaningful because they determine the future, they change the future, they have an impact on what's going to happen in the year to come, or are they meant as a means to an end? It's a means to an end. He's saying, there's nothing here that's significant unless it brings you to Tshuva and Maisim Tovim. This is just one of many methods. You know, if the Meiri was a Mashgiach in a yeshiva, he would say, eat these simonim and make the declarations and have in mind that we want Hashem to help us increase our tzidkus, our religious observance, and so forth and so on. However, now we get to the Ramban. And this we'll soon see. This Ramban is the breakthrough that's going to totally revolutionize our understanding of what simonim milsa means, and why we eat these simonim. And this is going to be the antecedent for the Maharal Prague, who's going to take it even a step further than the Ramban. Now this Ramban appears in Parshas Lech Lecha, some of which I have on the page for you. I have the original Ramban. I'm going to read it from the original because there are certain embellishments that are here that are not in your text, because I gave you a short abridged version. This is the Ramban's introduction to a principle which he uses over and over again throughout the entire Sefer Brachos, which is called Maisa Avo Siman Lebonim. What does that mean, Maisa Avo Siman Lebonim? So let me read to you the Ramban. The pasuk itself says, Vayavar Avram Ba'aretz Ad Makom Shechem. The Torah records in great detail the travels of Avram through the land until he came to a place called Shechem. Says the Ramban, Omar lecha klal. I want to reveal to you a principle, Tovinoso, you should understand it well, Bechol ha-parshios, because it's going to shed a light on all the parshios that are coming up, Habos, Be'inyan Avram, V'Yitzchak, the Yaakov, that basically takes you throughout Sefer Brachos, who Inyan Gadol is something very fundamental and very significant. His Kiru Rabosenu B'derech Tzara V'Yomru, they gave it a short form, Kol Masha Iro Li'Avos Simon Lubonim. Again, the word Simon appears here. Very critical word. Whatever happens to the Avos, that is going to tell us what's going to happen to their descendants. The Lachain, that would answer the question, Lama Yarichu Aksuvim, why did the Psukim go through each detail? Besipur Hamasos, in the stories about the travels of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, V'chafiros HaBe'eros, we're going to have later on, an entire discussion in Parshas Chayisar about, you know, Avram dug wells, and then they got covered up by the Plishtim, and then Yitzchak is going to reopen them. Vishar Kol HaMikrim, and all the other details and stories about the lives. V'yachshav HaChoshev, and a person who reads this, Kiyu Eim Dvar Miyutarim, these are totally extra superfluous stories. Ein Bam Toelis, we have nothing to gain from it. Says Ramban, name, you shouldn't understand the way. Kulam Boim Lilamid Alasid. They're all teaching us about the Jewish history. Jewish history is being forged and formed and presented here in Sefer Breishis. Ki Kasha Yava Mikro Lenavi Mishloshes Avos. Anything that happens in the lives of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, whatever befalls them, is Yizbonim Imenu. If we study that, is from it, from those stories, from those episodes, is Yizbonim Imenu Dover Shenigzar Lovo Lazar, will figure out what the divine decree is that's going to happen to the descendants of the Avos. What's the deeper meaning here? Why are the events that take place in the lives of the Avos so significant that it will reveal what's going to happen to the children? Vida, says the Ramban, Ki kol gzeras irin. Now the word irin is a word that comes from the world of mysticism, of Kabbalah. The Ramban was a great Kabbalist, maybe the greatest Kabbalist that ever lived. And irin are some sort of divine messengers or offices in the King of Kings palace up in Shemayim. And sometimes the irin are the officers in the king's court that will issue decrees. Again, they all have to be an expression of the will of God, obviously. The Irin don't work independently of God. But it's not a decree that comes directly from the divine being, but rather through these officers called Irin. And when they introduce a gzerah, that gzerah, that decree about what's going to befall the Jewish people is Bekoach. What does Bekoach mean?
Potential.
Potential. It's not yet befall. It has potential. God may say, you know, I decree that a certain nation, the adversaries of the Jewish people, will be destroyed. They'll fail in their plans to destroy the Jewish people. But right now, it's only Bekoach. Kashar teitze mikoach hagzera lapoal. There is a way of taking this decree, which is Bekoach, its potential, and actualizing it, and clinching it, and doing something which he calls Bepol Adimyo, meaning in the real world, we can, in a sense, act out that gzera in some sort of symbolic way. And what's the result? Tia hagzera miskayemes al kol panim. By doing these actions, we have a tremendous impact in that those gzeros will now be clinched, will be guaranteed that they will come to fruition. In other words, there's stage one and stage two. At stage one, there's a gzeras irin. There's a decree on high. But that decree is still in the getter of what? Bekoach. We don't know if it will happen or if it won't happen. But when we do this action called the Pol HaDimyon, then we absolutely decree, we absolutely determine that that decree is irreversible and it will come to pass. V'lachein, and therefore, Yasu HaNeviim Maisa B'Nevuos. The Neviim, the prophets, starting from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but throughout the course of Jewish history, receive prophecy with promises about what's going to happen. For example, Yirmiyahu HaNavi gets a prophecy that there will be a destruction of Bavel. Bavel is at that point in history the arch enemy of the Jewish people. And Yirmiyah commands Baruch ben Neri is one of his main people there, one of his followers, his disciples, and he tells him, "Vayikachavloso likros a sefer hazeh, as diri a sefer hazeh, tikshar olav evan. I want you to tie a stone down. Vishlichaso el toch prat. Prat is, I think, called the Euphrates River, if I'm not mistaken. V'amarta, you should declare, Kocha Tishka Bovel. Just like you threw the stone to the bottom of this great gigantic river, and you declared, this is what's going to happen to Bovel, meaning that Bovel will be destroyed, that symbolic act of throwing, of casting the Evan into the Prat, will guarantee that the prophecy, that good tiding, that God decreed that Bovel will be destroyed, is going to come to pass. It will happen. Why will it happen? Because it was clinched by the action that was mandated by the Navi to take this Evan and throw it into Prat. He gives another example, the Ramban. V'chein inyan Elisha. Okay, here we have a different adversary called Aram, which I think in English is called Assyria. I'm not sure, don't quote me on that. V'chein inyan Elisha. This is a parsha in Melachim Beis. It says there, Banichos Ro'al Akeshes. He has to lean his arm on a bow. V'yomer Elisha, and then he declares, Yaro Yora, Chetz Chul Hashem. And he shoots out the arrows. And he was commanded to shoot out these arrows against Aram, meaning in the direction of this adversary of the Jewish people. And then when Elisha gave this decree, that it wasn't performed exactly the way it was to, and therefore Aram was not destroyed immediately. It took a longer time until Aram was finally defeated. Ulefichach, and therefore, the Ramban comes back, Hichzik HaKadosh Baruch Hu Avram Ba'aretz. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu see to it that Avram Avinu would travel the width and the breadth and the north, south, east, and west of the land? Asalo Dimyonos. He was making a physical representation of Bechol Asid Lasos Lazar, of whatever is going to happen to his children, to his descendants. And that's what Avram was able to do. By walking through the land, you know, and he walked in all directions, he was actually clinching that the divine promise to Avram that his children, his descendants, would inherit the land, would indeed come about. It became an irreversible decree that would definitely come to pass by the actions of Avram. The Ramban says that now I'm going to go through all the psukim in Sefer Bereishis, and I'm going to teach you how in each case and every episode it was a clincher that would guarantee that the divine decree would come to pass. Now, Rabbos, I just want to point out one thing. There are two types of divine decrees. What are they? The good ones and the bad ones. You know, when does the Navi want to make sure that he clinches it? The good ones. He doesn't want to do this for the bad ones because he's always hoping that maybe the bad decrees will be repealed and rescinded at some point if the Jews merit that. But when it comes to the good decrees, he wants to guarantee that beyond a shadow of a doubt, these good decrees will come to pass, to fruition. And he has to do this action called Pol Adimyon in order to clinch that it's going to happen. Okay, Ad Kan, the Ramban. Now let's look at the Maral Miprag. The stage is set to understand the Maral Miprag. First, the Maral quotes the Gemara in what? In Horios. Abaye advocates in favor of, you know, eating all these different foods or fruits or vegetables on the night of Rosh Hashanah, and it's all based on Simona Milsa. Milsa means it's significant. The Simon that we're doing is significant. Matzasi, says the Maral, Shehem Tmeim, that there is a whole bunch of people who are a little bit, I don't want to use the word cynical, but they're not on board with this concept of eating the simonim on Rosh Hashanah. In their minds, it appears that that's a kind of a nichush. You know, we're trying to guess what's going to happen. The Dover Ze'eno, don't accept that approach. Now, if you remember, the Meiri also said not to accept that this is nichush. She'im Cain, if you were to accept that this was Nichush, then yeah, Maisa Elisha, Maisa Yirmi, in your Nichush Chas V'Shalom. The Maral says that you're accusing of all those actions, you know, where Yirmiyah tells him to throw the stone in the water, and Elisha says to shoot the arrows, as if all these are kinds of nichush, chas v'shalom, he says, to accuse Yirmiyah Navi or Elisha Navi. I should have said it the other way around, Elisha then Yirmiyah of nichush. But rather, hine dover zehu simon v'os lios nigbar hadover. He says, but rather the significance of a simon is that this becomes a symbol of nigmar adover. What does nigmar adover mean? Literally it means finalized, but how'd you embellish that? Actualized, that it will be actualized. The dover zeh, and how do I come to this conclusion, says the Maral? Because bir harav hagodol ramban zal amakubal haloki. Because the Ramban in his perish on Lech Lecha, who, and he describes the Ramban as being the rabbi who's so great, he is the divine Kabbalist, Asher Elov, Levado, Niglu, Talumos, Chachma, Vesodei Torah. There's no one to whom was revealed the secrets of the wisdom of the Torah more than the Ramban. This is a tremendous accolade here for the Ramban. And you'll see how much the Maral is influenced by the Ramban. V'kasav v'parshas Lech Lecha. Now, from here until the end of this paragraph is simply a quote of the Ramban, word for word, verbatim. V'dvarim elu, he says at the end, heim brurim. This is all very clear. U'me'ata, now based on this Ramban, teida lohav in dvarim elu. I want you to understand the following. Ki adover hazeh, that which Abaye recommends that we do on the night of Rosh Hashanah, hu chachma nifla, it's an amazing wisdom, lasos gzer elyon dimyon v'simon lamata, that if there was, and we hoped and prayed that there was a divine decree upstairs in Shamayim, we need to do a dimyon, what the Ramban called the koach hapoel, to do some sort of imaginary fictitious act, like as if we were on stage, you know, play on stage. And through that dimyon, we do a simon lamata, kidei sheteitzei lefoal, so that this tov, this foretelling of goodness for the year to come, will in fact be actualized and realized in the year to come. V'tehei mekayemes hagzer letov. Our simonim guarantee that gzer letov is going to come to fruition. Lachain, therefore, roi lasso simon v'dimyon. It is highly recommended that we do these simonim. We make this dimyon. We're really just following in the footsteps. We're imitating Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Elisha, and Yirmiyah, throughout the Nevi'im throughout history. Vizel inyan adimyon lemichle berosh shat advarim sheyesh bahem simon tov kidei sheteitzei hagzera lefoal. And now on the top of page 2, v'yaz tiagzera tovim miskayemes. By implementing these simonim, we guarantee that all these great, you know, these great decrees up in heaven on Rosh Hashanah will come to pass. V'ein bo zeh nechush, don't think that we're now trying to gaze into the stars. Raki hachana, it's our physical activity, or our hishtadlus, as we'd say, you know, our efforts, kidei sheteitzei hagzera letova, so that the gzera itself, which is a good one, will come to fruition. V'dvarim elu ne'imim, and the Maral says, I want you to take what I said very seriously, take it to heart, because ne'imim, meaning they're very sweet, v'yikar mipaz, they're worth more than the, you know, expensive jewels. The kol chafetim lo yishru, and there's nothing that's as worthy as this. You know, the Maral waxes very dramatic and very emphatic about his presentation. I think he's sort of giving himself a pat on the back, because nobody until the Maral, as far as I know, understood the great significance of these simanim. You know, come to the night of Rosh Hashanah, and you're eating all these different things and making all these different declarations, And, you know, we could be very laid back about it, very cynical about it. The Maharal says, based on the Ramban, that this is inherent. You know, I asked you the following question when we started. Are these simanim meaningful in and of themselves to create an impact on the universe, or are they just a means to an end that's going to influence us? What was that conclusion based on the Meiri? Just a means to an end. It's just a way in which we arouse ourselves and inspire ourselves to talk about Rubya Sheyirbu Tzidkosenu, or the fact that Krasi means Yichrisu Sonenu, we are dedicated to destroy our enemies, and we have to destroy them physically and spiritually. These are all methods, as he calls them, L'tshuvah L'maisim Tovim, and he warns us, says the Meiri, don't get too caught up with these simanim. You might miss the forest for the trees. You know, a person can do all these simanim, you know, he spends, you know, days and days before Rosh Hashanah, and he goes down to Shuk Machna Yehuda, wherever his favorite place is, or he goes to one of those health food stores, you know, whatever, and he buys all the simanim, and he spends who knows what, and he gets the best beautiful simanim, and today you can buy them already pre-arranged if you pay through the nose, and this is exciting. But says the Meiri, he misses the whole point, because he's not arousing or inspiring himself to do tshuva. You know, it's like people who bring karbanos, and all they do is bring the karban, but it doesn't have any impact on their lives. Or people who recite vidui, but they're not serious about it. People daven, and they mumble the words, you know, as if they were mumbling, but it doesn't have any impact on them. So they miss the whole point. The whole point, says the Meiri, through the simanim, we have to do tshuva. Not so, says the Maharal. The Maharal says it goes way beyond that. It's existentially different. This is something that is essential because it clinches the gzera. It guarantees that the divine decree for good for the year to come is going to come to pass. Now, Rabosai, I said to you that the Maharal is the first one to understand the depths of the meaning of Abaye and Horios and the custom, this custom of Simon. However, the Mardechai, in his introduction to Masechta Yuma, has a very fascinating piece. Now again, I'm going to read it from the original, a summary of which, an abridged summary you have here on the top of page 2. Kasuv b'tshuva sagaonim. Now understand that the Mardechai is one of Chachmei Ashkenaz. He's one of the Balei HaTosfos. But before him, by two centuries, comes the Gaonim. So you're really going back 1,200 years in history. And the Gaonim write the following. Shechasam. Shechasam means people who try to deride us, you know, put us down. Sha'anu, they accused us of nochashe nechishos, that we do all sorts of strange, superstitious things that belong to the province of nichush, of omens and signs and so forth. Like when I was a kid, I don't know if anyone here relate to this. They said that you should be very careful if a black cat crosses in front of you. Does anybody? And then there was something called a rabbit's foot. Okay, you don't have to know about that. Then there was something called knock on wood. These are all paganistic cultures that came through Christianity and affected the rank and file citizen of the United States and other Western countries. That's called nichush. And some people accuse us, says the Gonim, that we have customs that border on these kind of superstitious nichush things. Sha'an regilim likach roshei kvasim b'Rosh Hashanah. Right, we take a sheep's head on Rosh Hashanah. Anybody here in this room do such a thing? We also have it. Just I can't eat it, but right, so you know the Rosh Hashanah is fine. For Oakland Dvash. Okay, how many people in this room eat honey on Rosh Hashanah?
Everybody.
Only three people? I'm surprised. I thought everybody, but people are embarrassed. Maybe they don't want to admit it. Agavi, by the way, won't cut the mustard here. But the Chomeni Masika, forget about sucralose. That's not it. You have to eat dvash and other sweets. The Ochlim Tinsi in Basar Shuman. There was some sort of a food that they ate with very fatty meat. V'ochlim rubio kresi. V'sha'anu shochtim tarnagolim b'erev from Yom Kippur. He says we also do kaparis on erev Yom Kippur. And he goes on and on to give a list of all the different things that we do, where he talks about the koshal avdola that we do, we wash it on the inside, and then we pour the wine in, and so forth and so on. He says, Nashiv lechem al rishon rishon v'alachron achron. I can address every one of these customs and justify them and rationalize them and explain them. But let me go one by one. Ki anichush kaze tovu. There's something called nichush which is good, it's admirable, it's recommended. Verubo mi yasod hamikra. And it's all based on psukim and Tanakh, the agados, and on agadic statements in the Shas. For example, he says, "Al roshei kvasim, shalu ochlu, we eat the heads of the sheep. Kidei, shiashmienu akadosh baruch hu l'tova b'rosh hashanah v'yasimenu l'rosh v'lo l'zana." Again, this is going back to the Gaon in 1200 years. This is not some sort of, you know, invention of one of these, you know, modern Orthodox shuls or whatever. This goes back 1200 years, my friends. Umashanu ochlim tisni ubasar shuman. We eat these fatty, meaty substance. Vishosim dvash. I guess their dvash was a little different than ours. I wouldn't call it shosim dvash, but
it was from that.
They drink honey, so I don't know if honey was in a liquid form. The chol mini mesika, we eat all these sweet things. Kedesha tehei hashana ba leinu misuka. It should be a sweet year. Ushmena, shmena means it should be a wealthy year. Fatty means, you know, we should make a good parnasa. And then he says v'chein kasuv b'sefer Ezra. And here's where the first one. This is way before the Meiri. This goes back to the Gaonim. Refers to sefer Ezra. Now I want to take the time to read what it says in Sefer Ezra. Again, Ezra is called Nehemiah in Tanakh, but it's really Ezra. And the Tanakh describes in the 8th parak, Vayavi Ezra HaKohen es HaTorah lifnei HaKol. Ezra was famous for his establishing those customs about reading the Torah publicly. Me'ish ve'isha, this is fascinating, by the way, because there's a whole discussion about what obligations are incumbent upon women, and I know we have a few women in the audience, so I'm afraid to tell you this, but the Magen Avraham is of the opinion, based on this pasuk, that women have to come and hear Kriyas HaTorah. So I shouldn't tell you this, because Mutav Shiv Shogigim, you know, you're better off not knowing this. V'chol Mevin L'shmoa, whoever could understand the Torah. And what day of the calendar year was Ezra gathering together the entire community to hear the Torah being read? Biyom Echad L'Chodesh HaShvi, otherwise known as Rosh Hashanah. Vayomer Nehemiah v'Ezra Kohen. Nehemiah is called the Tarshasa because he came from a place called Tarshash. And Ezra is called the Sofer because he was famous for writing the Torah. Valeviim. And the Leviim were there to transmit the Torah to the people of Israel. Ha-mevinim es ha'am. Mevinim is in causative form, meaning to cause others to understand. L'chol ha'am ayom kadosh hu l'Hashem Elokeinu. You should know, this is the message of Nehemiah, Ezra, and the Leviim. Today, meaning the first day of the seventh month, which is Alef Tishri, which is Rosh Hashanah, is a day that's sanctified to our God. The Altis Ablu. On a day that's sanctified, you mitarnished, we're not allowed to be misabel. There's no room for grief and mourning. You know the famous story that took place about 50 years ago with the Mashgiach in the yeshiva in Bayit Vagan. And it was Erev Yom Kippur, so he saw one of his Talmidim who was saying Vidu. You know, Mincha, we have Erev Yom Kippur, we say that Vidu of Al-Chet, it's called a Vidu Yorach, it's a longer Vidu. And he noticed that this guy was beating himself, beating his brow, and he was yelling, and he was this. And he stood there for an entire hour. And the Mashgiach said to himself, I got to get out of here because I got to go to the mikveh. They're going to close the mikveh. When he came back from the mikveh, the Talmud was still banging himself with the Al-Chet for another hour. So Mashgiach comes over to him and he says to him, I think on Yom Kippur you should leave out Al-Chet. Just say Hashamnu Bagadnu, the short form. So the Talmud apparently was very unnerved by this psach, because after all, Al-Chet, you know, it's a major part of the Machzor. So he went to the Rosh Yeshiva of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, And he said to him, Rebbe, the Mashkiach paskin for me that I should only recite Oshamnu, because he thinks I was too rough on myself in the long video of Al-Khayt. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said to him, the Mashkiach is a mekel, he's too lenient. I'm sorry, the Mashkiach was too machmir, he was too strict. I would tell you not to say Oshamnu. Don't even say Oshamnu. In other words, people take these days and they convert them into days of avelus and mourning. Ezra tells the people, Al tisabolo, al tivku. And the reason he said it is because when the people heard the Torah, they started crying. He says, don't cry. Vayomer lehem, and then he tells them, this is one of the most famous psukim in all Tanakh, lechu, ichlu mashmanim, go and eat fatty foods, ushesu mamtakim, and drink sweets, vishilchu monos. Okay, if we have a chance, I'll talk to you about the Maral on those two words, Shilchu Monos. What does that sound like to you? Which holiday? Yeah, it sounds like the holiday of Purim. What's it doing here in Rosh Hashanah? What's the connection between Purim and Rosh Hashanah? Le'ei Nochalom means somebody who doesn't have his own food to eat. Send him Monos. Ki Kadosh Hayom Ladunenu V'Yalte Atzvu. Atzvus means sadness. This is not a day of sadness. Ki Chedvas Hashem Hima Uschem. Because it's a happy day. That's your strength. And basically, what Ezra is telling me is a whole new dimension, what I call Pen Chadash, to Rosh Hashanah. We think Rosh Hashanah is such a sad day, and Rosh Hashanah is a day where we're beating ourselves up because it's the first day of Aser Sivei Tshuva leading up to Yom Kippur, and we're so overwhelmed by the fear of Kol B'nei Morom Ovrim L'Chanav, you know, and all Bayolim Ovrim L'Fanav K'nei Morom, and me Yitzhak L'Fanav Kol Chai, and who will be righteous and found righteous in the eyes of God? Says Ezra Nain. You're missing the point. The point of Rosh Hashanah is to eat mashmanim, to sumam takim, and to enjoy the day. Ki Kadosh Hashem L'Adonenu, there's no room for Avelus, and there's no room for Bechia. And now we see perhaps the source for the Gaon. Remember, we started today with the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says, "Ein livkos Rosh Hashanah, ki mavur bi Ezra al tivku." So if you have a highlight, you want to underline in Nehemiah here on page 2 the words al tivku on the third line, because that's the key of keys from the Gaon's perspective. But the Gaon went a step further. And in a book called Keser Rosh, which is authored by the Gaon's most outstanding disciple, namely Reb Chaim Volozhin, he writes about the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, Rabbeinu Yisamach Ma'od B'Eist Kiyas HaShofar. A lot of people start crying when they blow the shofar. Well, that's not what the Gaon did. The Gaon was in a state of joy, but I'm looking for another word.
Ecstasy.
Of ecstasy. Excellent. Thank you. Ecstasy when he heard the shofar. V'chein Omer, this is what he commanded us. Tzarech lios berov simcha v'chedva. And why? Why should we be in such a state of ecstasy and joy? Because it's like a country on the day that they coronate the king. And so too with the Tkiyah Shofar, Mamlichim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we establish God as the king of all the Olamos, of all the worlds, not just the world that we live in, but worlds and worlds. And Anachnu Imo, and we are together with the King. If we are together in close proximity with the King, then we have to be, and we should be, almost spontaneously, Berov Simcha V'Chedva, in a state of ecstasy and joy. My Rebbe Rav Salvechik used to say, because his father was the Rav of a city of Lubavitches, of Chabadnikim, in Chaslavich, he used to say that his Malamed, when he was 8 years old, would gather together the children before Rosh Hashanah, and he would say to them, "What's this?" And he held the shofar. So all the kids in the cheder, you know, the 8-year-old kids would yell out, "It's a shofar." And then the Rebbe would say, "What do we do with this shofar?" Oh, so they got a few different answers. We blow it, this, that. Name. With this shofar, we coronate the King of Kings. And the Rav said he was an 8-year-old and he couldn't understand. How could it be that the Jewish people who are so downtrodden? My father came from that area of Europe, and my father used to say that Jewish blood was like hefker. And there was less din and less dayan. You know, if a guy would kill a Jew, nobody would care about it. There was nowhere to take it to. That was how intense the anti-Semitism was. And we, the Jewish people, are going to blow this shofar, and we're going to coronate the king as the King of Kings. Very paradoxical. And the Rav speaks about it in many of his writings, especially in Halachic Man. But this was the simcha of the Vilna Gaon. How are we doing on the clock? Do we still have a few minutes?
10.
Okay. I want to study with you again because I want to show you how, you know, we can really take this concept of Rosh Hashanah and Siman Milsa one step further. One of the great mashgichim of the last generation, I mean, he died probably about 10 years ago, was the Alei Shar. What was his name? It just escaped me for a second. Okay, it'll come to me. Anyway, he wrote a book called Alei Shar, and he writes the following: Nimtza b'svarim hakadoshim, you'll find in the holy books, ki or Rav Volba. Has anybody here heard of Rav Volba? He's the author of the Alei Shar. He had a Beis Hamusar on Rehov Ponim Meiros, which is called Mattersdorf, if anybody knows the area. And he had a tremendous impact on many of the great Musar thinkers of
the Chazan HaKazit.
Correct. You know, you just keep going by, you know, you pass Terem or whatever it is today, Magen David Adom, which changes. And he said the following: you'll find in the holy writings, Ki Rosh Hashanah, what happens on Rosh Hashanah? Yoredes Nekuda Achas Mechudeshes Miginze Meromen. Some new spark or element comes down from the higher realms and the heavens. Sheba, and what's inside this Nekuda, this point? Gluma, meaning in a rough state, in a potential state, Tsuras Hashanah Chadosh, a picture of what the year is going to look like. And this comes down from the heavens. Bidugmas, where do I find something similar where you have something that's coming from a higher world and it eventually takes on a fashion or a structure? That's called Koach Yuli. In English, it's called hylitic matter. The Ramban sheet is that God created the world. The first thing he created was Chomer Hiyuli. That's a Greek word. Yeah. And it's some sort of formless matter. And then from that, God gave a structure to every single thing in this universe. He says, just like Koach Hiyuli should never be on Rishon Shamaisa Bereshis. It's the first thing that was created on the first day. And then afterwards, from that came the tzura, the shape and the form of everything that we know of that was created by God in the rest and the balance of the Sheshes Yimei Maaseh. So too, there's something called a Nekuda Achas, begins a Meromim, which is a kind of Koach Yuli, that's a Nekuda Azos, in that point, Morid Klal Yisrael B'tfilosof Utkiyosof. This is fascinating because he's saying that potential of what the year might look like is given into the hands of Klal Yisrael. In other words, it's not something that automatically is sent down from the heavens. According to Rav Volba, it's something that's given over to Klal Yisrael. It's almost as if they're sort of like the middleman here. They're going to determine what elements in that Nakuda, in that potential form, will actually be realized, will be actualized. How do they do so? Through, number one, that tefilos, and number two, that tkios. What does that mean? Tfilos, ad kama shemispalim me'omka d'libo, to the extent to which they pray from the depths of their heart. Mishavim meslibo v'lfei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ma'orim simcha rabba b'kabolas malchuso yizbarach. Take a look at what Rav Volba says. He's got a two-stage process. In the first stage, we break our hearts. Who can give me a better term for that? We pour out our hearts. What would you say? You know, when you're in a state of crisis, like an animal that's being threatened, the human being that's being threatened, he realizes what's on the line over here, because what's going to happen with this Nekuda Achas? Is it going to become a great thing for Klal Yisrael and for the future year or not? Chas v'shalom. So we're really overwhelmed by the weight and the seriousness of what's going on over here. But then we realize at the next point in the stage, we blow the shofar, we accept and coronate the king, and his will becomes our will. That is Ma'or Simcha Rabba. Now, in place of the original feelings of Shviras Halev, of brokenness, those are all replaced now by a tremendous sense of Simcha, of joy and ecstasy. Very similar to what we saw in the Vilna Gaon, who based himself on the Pasuk in Nehemiah. that Rosh Hashanah is a sanctified day that requires simcha, and the Gaon felt that simcha reached its apex at the time of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim, when we declared and incarnated God as King at the time of Tkiyas Shofar. And then as a result of this whole process, beginning with that Tfilos and culminating with that Tkiyos, Moridim Tzura Shel Shana Tova Umivureches, we bring down from the heavens a Tzura of a wonderful good year, a blessed year. But Rabosa, it's still in the abstract world of Tzura. It still is only a Gzeiras Irin, if I could use the term of the Ramban. Now we have to clinch it and make sure that Lahotzi Lepol, that it'll be actualized. He says, in Ba'ochel, if he eats it, B'simana Milsa, then he clinches it. And if he could do that by eating it, then certainly, he says, B'dibur of a Meiser, if he declares that this should be a great year, and then he eats it, that for sure is going to create this clincher. And therefore, Tzrichim Kolan Hodos Lios Misuka, everything that we do should have a sweetness to it. On Rosh Hashanah, he says, on Uzorim, we plant the seeds for what will grow in the year to come. All the potential for the year to come is inherent in Rosh Hashanah, in our actions, our declarations, our Simona Milsa, and therefore, Yeshlanu Lizroa Gak Peros Tov, we have to be very careful that on Rosh Hashanah, what we plant are the good fruits. Labal Nizra, be careful not to plant anything that's Isvei Bar. You know, those are the wild kind of things that grow in the wilderness that have a certain bitterness to them. That we have to avoid on Rosh Hashanah. Now we conclude our discussion for today, the Ezra Hashem, by going back to the first question that we raised. The Gaon says, we're not allowed to cry on Rosh Hashanah. And he quotes Ezra. On the other hand, the Arizal says that we should cry on Rosh Hashanah, not just on Yom Kippur. And he who doesn't cry on Rosh Hashanah, his neshama is not in good shape. How do we reconcile these two? Anybody want to take a stab at it? In the light of everything we've discussed today about the experience of the Avod of Yom of Rosh Hashanah, how can you say that there's no contradiction between the Gaon and the Arizal? George?
Tears of joy.
Excellent. Tears of joy. There are two types of bechios. The bechio of Havelus, Ezra says you have to leave it out. It's not appropriate for Rosh Hashanah. But if you're overwhelmed by the joy of an experience, I don't know how many people here can reminisce, either from last year or from the years before then, of moments where they cried tears of joy. You know, a new baby is born into the world, and Baruch Hashem, with all the miracles, a healthy baby, that's something that brings a person to tears of joy. A family gets together for a Pesach Seder, or for a Rosh Hashanah meal, or whatever occasion it might be, and the incredible simcha and joy of a family together. In my case, I was being wheeled into a surgery, and at the last minute, my surgeon decided, based on my wife's hashpa, wait a minute. And so far, I didn't have the surgery, so I'm still hanging in there. I'm hoping that God will not change the decree of last year and leave it as is. Like the famous story of the lady who had a great year, and on Rosh Hashanah, she turns to Ribbono Shel Olam, and somebody overhears her saying, God, you said that you're not allowed to write on Rosh Hashanah. It's Yontif. And you're bound by the same laws that we're bound by. So don't write me down for this year. Just leave the record as is. I had a good year. Leave it status quo. And that's exactly an experience of appreciating what God gave us and the joy that we had in the year that passed. And now we enter into the new year, and we're hoping that through our tefillos and our tekios, we're going to coronate the king, be makabel on a melchus shamayim, and we're overwhelmed by the closeness. You see, that's why I think the Gaon adds a word here that's very critical. I don't know if we emphasized it enough. In the Keser Rosh, which is at the bottom of page 2, or in the middle of page 2, he writes, Shanachnu imo. He adds those two critical words, that we are with him with a capital H. That closeness, that intimacy, the fact that God takes cognizance of us and he cares about us, that in the very paradoxical world of halacha, God says you, a human being who's here today and God tomorrow, will coronate me as the king of kings over all the universes and all the worlds. What greater simcha could there be v'anachnu imo, that we are with him? So when the Arizal says that you can go through an entire day of Rosh Hashanah without crying, it means that you're not overwhelmed by the joy of being so close to Hashem, incarnating him as the king. Then he says, Ein nishmaso shlema. He's missing something in his neshama. There should be an outpouring of joy, even to the point in which we have tears in our eyes.
I have heard that comment. From what he said, from what George said, the tears of joy. You read bechatzotzrot bekol shofar. They come from the same root. The simcha and the sadness, they come from the same root. So bechatzotzrot bekol shofar are in the same moment exposition of what is in your life. So you can be happy and sad.
If I understood Italian, I would tell you, Jackie, say it in Italian, because I love to hear you speak Italian.
Okay.
Isn't Italian a special language? We really like it. But on Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we all have a special language, and that's called the shofar. Yeah. And the fascinating thing is that Ezra tells us that on this day of Rosh Hashanah, we should be sending what? Mishloach Manos. Shouldn't somebody remind Ezra that Purim is about 6 months down the line, is it not? 5.5.
Can you consider?
Why Mishloach Manos?
Part of your Maaser, the Mishloach Manos that you make on Erev Rosh Hashanah?
I think it's part of Chesed. And the Maharal in Prague says that Rosh Hashanah commemorates the creation of the world. The coronation of God as king is a result of the creation of the world. And the Pasuk tells us, Olam Chesed Yibane, that the act of creation on the part of the divine being was one great act of Chesed. On this day, says the Maharal, of Rosh Hashanah, in which we commemorate the creation of the world, Olam Chesed Yibana, we have to imitate God. We have to experience our role as creators. And how are we creating worlds? Olam Chesed Yibana. And that's why, my friend, says the Maharal, Avraham Avinu plays such an important role on Rosh Hashanah. The whole story of the Akedah and the two Krios of the first day, Rosh Hashanah, and the second, are all about Avraham Avinu. He says, because Avraham is the pillar of Chesed, and Rosh Hashanah is the day of Chesed. And therefore, says the Maharal, it's not coincidental that Ezra warns us, L'shloach manos li'ein nachama, send manos to those who need it. Those who can't afford to buy that fancy simon, maybe send them some simon. Thank you so much. Take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Rosh Hashanah. And next week at this time, I think it'll be Rosh Hashanah, so we'll all be busy with the Simanim, just joking. And we'll see the following Tuesday, I think, is Yom Kippur, no? When is Yom Kippur? Anybody remember?
Wednesday.
Yeah,
it's Tuesday night, Wednesday. So Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock will be Kol Nidre. You know, so we got Rosh Hashanah coming up and Kol Nidre coming up. If there's an interest, I would continue the shiur after Yom Kippur. Again, my commitment was only for El, but you know, if people are interested in getting some getting their feet wet in the Maharal in Prague, I mean, the Maharal is endless, but we can at least touch a little bit of the Maharal's principles and Kiddush.
I never knew the Ashkenazim eat Semanim. I always thought only the Sfaradim.
The Sfaradim are more careful about it than the Ashkenazim. But Ashkenazim are becoming more and more into it. You know, we're becoming more Sfaradim. Yeah. As time goes on, we're becoming more like the Sfaradim.
Can I just ask you about the Me'iri? The Me'iri quotes all the reasons.
Thank you so much.
Question that I can ask. sorry.
Could just say, Michael wanted to ask me one question. Because
the Me'iri quotes all these reasons for the Simonim. Is this just his reasons, or is he quoting the Gemara?
No, this is his own insight.
So he's
dealing with the same issue, isn't it? It's this Nichush. Why is the Gemara advocating these superstitious actions, so to speak?
The Gemara doesn't actually give any reason.
No reason. For any of the things on the list.
And we seem to have adopted the Me'iri's, like, the words that we say seem to adopt the Me'iri's reasons for.
Well, they do, but also the Mordechai in the name of the Gaonim. Remember about Shana Tova Mesuka, Shani El Rosh Velo Lezanov. So it's our Minhag. Evolve over the course of time in terms of what we say when we eat the simon. The simonim pretty much remain the same. Shana Tova. But the statements and the declarations seem to metamorphosize, you know, over the course of time. And they're all based on different statements in the Rishonim and earlier than the Rishonim, the Gaonim. But the Me'iri sees it as a means to an end. This is all meant to bring us to a tshuva. The Maral, without mentioning the Me'iri, I don't know if he saw the Me'iri or not, I can't promise you. The Me'iri was one of those Svarim that was completely lost until after the Holocaust, when the Vatican decided to, you know, give the dog a bone, and they gave us a little bit of the manuscripts. Who knows what treasures they have in the Vatican, right? And the Maral is definitely crossing swords against the Me'iri. Yeah, you know, of course, the Maral sees it as an end in itself. This is something that will have a tremendous impact.
Sorry, you mentioned the earring. Yeah, the earring.
I mentioned what again?
Is it earring? They call them black kid angels.
Oh, Irin, right? Irin.
Irin
are offices.
But it's with Ayn?
With an eye. Right.
Okay, mentioned that they can make a decree. Can they make a decree on individual or on.
I don't know. I think it's generally a communal decree.
Is it Hashem who does the
decree? For sure.
So
but
do
you
they
see,
ask permission from Hashem?
Right. They get their authority delegated, but they implement the decree, meaning they actually make the decree into a decree.
So Hashem decide and through
that. And the difference is the following, because if it was a divine decree straight from Hashem, then that's called Eina Chozeres Li'olam. I don't think we need Simonim for that. But if it's a Gzeiras Irin, I think the Ramban is implying. I don't have access to the Ramban here right now, so I can't look it up. But I think what the Ramban is implying, that Gzeiras Irin needs a certain chizuk. You know, we have to strengthen it to guarantee that it will come to pass.
It can do negative things as well.
With a negative Gzera, we're not going to try to pull that off, because we don't want to do a Koch HaPoel and a Dimyon for a negative. But when it comes to a positive, that's what we're looking how to do it. And if we could destroy our enemies through a Simon,
with a Simon,
that's what we're going to do.
Thank you very much.
All right, all the best.
So presents that you make to your friends, you cannot consider them myself, but you have just Chesed.
Are we talking about poor people?
No.
If it's wealthy, if it's people who are, you know, amidim, you know, they're not poor, they have the wherewithal, then, you know, that's more for poor. That's nothing to do with Rosh Hashanah.
No, I'm not saying, I'm thinking in general, even during the year.
Oh, during the year, what, to give gifts to friends?
If you say gifts.
Again, I would think that comes under V'yahavtel Recha Kamocha, you know, that it increases love and brotherhood amongst the friends, you know.
Okay.
On the other hand, Chazal say, based on a pasuk in Kohel, Sonei Matanis Yichya, you know, that it's funny when you send a gift to someone, you're putting him in a very strange.
Well, that's what you do when it's an occasion of Simcha or
Right. But just to stop send gifts, that comes on. The Maral has a lot to say about Sonei Matanis Yichya. If we ever, maybe we'll take that up.
I used to say it, but it was in business. He used to say, if a customer is making to you a gift, let him go. Don't accept.
Because it's a bribe.
Yeah. Thank you, Rabbi.
All right, all the best, Kol Tov. Shana Tova.